the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights.
416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Taking your Blue Jays calls in the wake of an 8-3 win over the Colorado Rockies. The Jays have still never lost to the Rockies here at Rogers Center, and now they're 8-5 in interleague play this year. Things that usually don't happen with your Toronto Blue Jays. Jim in Toronto, listening on our flagship, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Mike. I mean, obviously, it's great to listen to the Jays as they go on this big win streak. It's obviously a lot of fun. It's obviously fun to see them winning and to see them get back to 500 and think about maybe, you know, wild card races and things like that. But probably the best part of it has just been, you know, that little bit of validation that I think we've all needed, that, you know, this is a team that is capable of being good, a team that's capable of winning a lot of games. And, you know, it kind of makes me feel better for, you know, say at the end of the year they miss the playoffs narrowly or whatever, and you know, we have to try again next year. It makes me feel good that nobody's going to be calling for it to be blown up. You know, nobody's going to be saying, oh, the big trades in the offseason were a bust and all that. You know, I think it's just, like I said, a little bit of validation that sort of, you know, everything's going to be okay. Even if this level of success doesn't continue, we know we can be good, and that's, you know, that's pretty exciting. And I also wanted to ask you a really quick question about Adam Lind. He's been so good lately. He's not on the league leaders for his batting average because he's got about, you know, roughly 100 at-bats less or fewer than most of the league leaders. I just wanted to know, I mean, it's hard to predict these things, obviously, but do you think at the current pace he'll have enough appearances to get onto the official tally for that, or is he always going to be under and is he never going to catch up? It'd be nice to see him be eligible for league leader and, you know, maybe get another Silver Slugger or something like that.
Yeah, it's funny. This is something that seems to be really important to a lot of Blue Jays fans. I get at least a dozen questions on Twitter every day about Adam Lind and why isn't he on the league leaderboard and when's he going to be on the league leaderboard and all those things. Absolutely, he's going to get there. And you know what? He's probably going to get there within the week. He's very, very close. It's a moving target, right? So as you need 3.1 plate appearances per team game played. So if you're five back and then you play a game and you get four plate appearances, you only pick up one against the goal because you have to add three every time out. But yeah, I would expect that Adam Lind is going to be on that leaderboard by the end of the week. And then everyone can be happy about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's nice to see the validation. It's nice to see, you know, you look at the league leaders and there's a Toronto Blue Jay on there. The last few years, batting average-wise anyway, it's been, you know, we've been certainly not at the top of the pack, maybe in the middle. But we haven't had a lot of 300 hitters lately.
You've had the home run leader like the last 3 years. You've had a guy in the top two in home runs in the league. So
okay, so you're saying I'm getting greedy, eh?
Yeah, it's all right. You know what? It's all right. But I think there's nothing wrong with wanting to see your guy's name at the top of the leaderboard list. I appreciate the call. I think people need to keep something in perspective, and I say this as someone who has spent the last 3 years, it feels like, trying to tell everyone that Adam Lind doesn't suck, isn't awful, isn't a waste of a uniform, shouldn't be released immediately, because it feels like that's pretty much every call that I've been getting about Adam Lind until this season. I feel like I have to point out that Adam Lind, right now, as a result of his 1-for-4 today, is hitting .342, which is pretty terrific. I'm trying to pull up his whole slash line for the season right now, so if you'll bear with me for a second, I can tell you that Adam Lind right now is hitting .342, with a 408 on base and a 545 slugging. That's an OPS of 953, which is really, really good. Now, there are people who believe that Adam Lind hasn't been any good since he won a Silver Slugger in 2009, but I just want to point this out. 2 years ago, in 2011, on June 18th, Adam Lind went 1-for-3 with a walk in the Blue Jays 4-0 win over the Cincinnati Reds. And at close of business on June 18th, Adam Lind was hitting .339 with a .384 on base and a .633 slugging for a .1017 OPS. So 2 years ago today, Adam Lind's OPS was about 60-70 points higher than it is right now in this resurgence. He's good for the first time in 4 years sort of season. Just to kind of let you know, he really hasn't been as bad as most people think for as long as most people think. Dan is in Toronto. Dan, you're up next on the Blue Jays talk.
Mike, this is a fun team to watch. It is a pleasure watching them. They are doing everything right.
Yes.
Except for one thing, and
no.
That's what I wanted to speak to you about. No. They have the pitching is fantastic now. The offense is clicking. The one thing that I found that has been consistent all season long is shoddy defense. They made another two errors tonight. Master Assurce's error was ugly. And if they're going to make a run, which I think they can and will, I worry that their defense is going to be what stands in their way of real success. And I'm wondering, Are they not working hard enough? Are they not practicing the little things? Like what causes major league players to make these mistakes over and over and over again?
It's not as bad as you think, really. I mean, when you look at it, the Blue Jays have made one more error than their opponents have made all season. So if the running theme for the Blue Jays season has been shoddy defense, then it's been the running theme for everybody they've played as well. They've made 45 errors this year. Their opponents in the 70 games have made 44 errors this year. They certainly have cleaned things up on defense quite a bit since the first couple of weeks of the season when it was just horrible to watch. They weren't getting the balls, and when they were throwing them away and just having a terrible, terrible time on defense. That really has changed, and it really has come around. You can't have your starting pitchers give up a grand total of, what, 5 runs in the last 7 games without having very good defense behind you.
Yet we had two errors again tonight. So, you know, like, I mean, our pitchers now are pitching around those mistakes, but it's not going to last. Like this,
they made two errors tonight, but you're saying that like that's a typical thing.
I mean, it seems to me that there are. I'm not watching every single game,
right?
But it seems to me that more often than not, there's a 1 or a 2 in that error column.
Well, again, 45 errors in 70 games would indicate otherwise, and that's the reality of what's going on with the Blue Jays right now. They did make two errors today. Both of them came with two out. The first one came with one out, but Mark DeRosa, who made that error, made up for it by turning a very nice double play later on. And 46 errors in 70 games, and their opponents have made 45.
So that's more than one error every two games. Like that seems to be a lot. I don't know. Like, does that seem like a lot for a major league team?
It's the same as their opponents.
My softball team makes fewer.
Only because your softball team probably scores everything a hit. Your typical softball team will make upwards of a dozen errors a game, Dan, and you know it. No, I don't have a problem with the Blue Jays defense at all. I think we've gotten spoiled by really, really, really good defense up the middle, especially on the infield over the years, and the Blue Jays no longer have really, really good defense up the middle on the infield. Whether it's Asturias or Bonifacio or Kawasaki or even Jose Reyes, none of those guys is an above-average defensive player. So that's something that we're going to have to get used to. But, again, it was brutal in the first month. It's come around significantly since then, I think. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Mark in Sherbrooke, Quebec. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
All right, go ahead.
So I just wanted to say a little bit about Rogers. He started off the year in the bullpen.
Yes.
And we'd see him come in. He'd throw 95, 96. And we'd say, okay, great, he's got great velocity, but he didn't have any control. And it was, I think, for the most part, straight. And then all of a sudden, at some point, now he's a starter, right, and he's doing quite well. And he starts throwing out the two-seam, which we never saw in the bullpen. So he has this, all of a sudden, he has a great two-seam. He's been throwing a changeup that we didn't see out of the bullpen. So I'm just wondering if, is this something that he picked up, you know, maybe from Henkin or some of the guys working with him, or, you know, what's going on here? Completely different pitcher.
Well, a lot of guys will do that when they move from the bullpen to the rotation and back and forth. And yeah, you're right about Rogers. In the early part of the season, he was just coming out there and getting beat up, really, until they he started this little streak of shutout innings in the middle of May. He had an ERA of 6.5 at one point this season through his first, well, I don't know, couple dozen, maybe not even, relief appearances. He was a guy who would come up, come out and throw this straight fastball and walk people and give up a bunch of hits and have trouble keeping the ball in the park and all that stuff. And it changed drastically. And it was 18 outings in which he did that. And then he started throwing up zeros. And this is a guy who has been a starter before. And you cut down your repertoire when you move from the rotation to the bullpen, or you go back to one or two pitches. He told me that he tried to pitch the same way as he pitched as a reliever once he moved into the rotation because things had started to go so well for him. But, yeah, the two-seamer is working beautifully. The filthy, filthy sinker has just gotten that much better. And we've seen a pretty curveball as well from him. So he's breaking out all the tricks now that he's in the rotation because that's what you got to do in order to get guys three times. And he had some trouble the third time through the lineup tonight.
Yeah, well, and he's locating all three pitches. So, I mean, he's definitely got to stay in the rotation. I had one other question I wanted to ask you, maybe what your opinion would be on it. When Reyes comes back, what do you think about... A lot of people seem to think that maybe Kawasaki's the... as much as we don't want to see him go, a lot of people think that he's maybe the one who's going to go. You know, when people talk about him being, you know, he's too much of a light-hitting, you know, guy, and I get that. I mean, he bats 220, I guess it is. But he's still, you look at his on-base percentage, and he's, what, 320 maybe?
Still, which is still terrible. I mean, it's good relative to the 220 batting average, that's for sure. But it's still not good. That's the thing. And Kawasaki's hitting 219 with a 337 on base and a 292 slugging. So, you know, the walks are there. They're lovely. But when you look at the list of what people can do, there's less on Kawasaki's list than on the other guys who are on the bubble for what to do when Reyes comes back. But who knows? Someone could get hurt between now and then. Things can change. You never know. But by the time Reyes gets back. We are going to continue with the Blue Jays talk, and again, we'll take you all the way till 11 o'clock Eastern Time on our flagship, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet590.ca. For the rest of the country, we'll come back and wrap things up. Blue Jays beat the Rockies 8-3. It's a Honda postgame on the Home Hardware Blue Jays Radio Network. Big night for Esmael Rogers. Takes a no-hitter into the sixth inning. Big night for the Blue Jays. They beat the Colorado Rockies 8-3. To wrap up a seventh straight win. They're now just two games under 500, and they will go for their second straight sweep tomorrow night. We're on the air at 7 o'clock Eastern for a 7:07 first pitch, Mark Burley against righty Juan Nicasio. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware, homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Howard, Dirk Hayhurst, Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, and Gord Brunt, I'm Mike Wilner. Good night from Rogers Center. First pitch swinging, and J.P. Arencibia hammers one to left field out of here. Second deck. easy power for J.P. Arencibia. His 15th home run of the year makes it 7-0 Blue Jays. And Mike Ristouras would go back-to-back with J.P. Arencibia there in the sixth inning. 8-0 on the way to an 8-3 easy win for the Blue Jays over the Colorado Rockies. Things are going very well in Blue Jay land as they've won 7 in a row, and really, most of them lopsided wins. That one game that started the streak was in Chicago. Jose Bautista with a two-out solo homer in the ninth inning to tie the game, and the Blue Jays scored two in the 10th to win it 7-5, but then it was a 3-1 win, 8-0, 6-1, 7-2. Last night's 2-0, and 8-3 tonight. The Blue Jays have really walloped the opposition over the course of the 7-game win streak that has them now just 2 games under 500. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk, and we are going to 11 o'clock. We have lots of phone lines open. It really continues to amaze me that we get so many fewer calls after a win than we do after a loss. It's almost like fans out there are afraid to be happy about something. And I know that you've been scarred by the Maple Leafs. And I know that you've been scarred even earlier this season when you expected the Blue Jays to be doing then what they're doing now. Instead, they're still trying to climb out of the hole that they dug themselves. But this is a good team, and it's a good team now that's playing very, very well, even without Brandon Morrow, without Jose Reyes, Sergio Santos, Brett Laurie, Jay Happ, Ricky Romero, all these people we thought were going to be a part of a winning team. None of them are here, and the Blue Jays have finally started to play some good baseball. So don't be afraid. Pick up the phone. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Mike is in Windsor watching us, kind of, on Rogers Digital Cable, channel 904. Mike, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Yeah, hi, Mike. First of all, I'm not afraid to be happy. I'm very happy. So
glad to hear.
I don't fall into that category. A quick comment on one of your earlier calls before I get to main purpose of my call. The Blue Jays' defense is not shoddy at all. And I always suspect whenever somebody complains about how many errors they make that those people maybe haven't seen that many games live. You watch on TV and you compare it to your local slow pitch game, and man, those balls are hit pretty hard at you. I'm amazed how well they do, and how many successful plays are made. And if you talk about the Blue Jays' shoddy defense, look at what Encarnacion did yesterday when he was parallel, and Asturias is a beautiful play as well. So you accept the odd error, you're going to get them. Every team gets them, and there's nothing to worry about as far as their defense. It really upset me actually earlier in the year when everybody was knocking Bonifacio because he made the 3 errors in that one game. But I mean, I said to friends of mine, look, he's got a track record. It's a one bad game. It doesn't mean he can't play second base, and he's proven that he can play quite well. So
yeah, a lot of people get first impressioned, especially when you've never seen guys play before. Hopefully this turnaround is kind of teaching people to be a bit more patient and to understand a little bit more that these guys have accomplished things before they got here. I mean,
that's right. They've got a proven track record. Yeah. So when all their batting averages were under 240 earlier in the year, you know, it just wasn't going to continue. There was no way that would happen.
That's right.
Anyway, the main purpose of my call, I want to talk to you and ask you about the official score. And I've always wondered about this.
Okay.
Tonight, for example, Edwin hit a slow roller to Arenado. Arenado bobbled it. And he got on base. Now the announcers were speculating that because they're at home and you have a home team official scorer, it would probably be scored as a hit. And then they were surprised when it wasn't. And that got me thinking, in this day and age, when everything else is modernized and instant replay, at least in the situation of with home runs or whatever, why we still have home team official scorers. And rather than, it seems to me it wouldn't be hugely expensive to have a neutral scorer appointed by the league to cover to score each game. So why? So it's a question and a comment. I don't know who actually appoints. They are appointed by the home team, I know. So who gets to be the official scorer? And why, in your opinion, does the league not go to a neutral official scorer?
Well, they're supposed to be neutral. They're employed by the major leagues, and part of their job description is that they're supposed to be there's not supposed to be a home field advantage for the official scorer, but a lot of official scorers are huge homers.
Yeah.
Some cities have real strong strong reputations for official scorers who are will always give the benefit of the doubt to their player because I guess I don't know, they're fans. But here in Toronto, it seems to be pretty good. Right now, the official scores, there's a group of three or four.
Yeah.
Our own Roger Lajoie is one of them.
Oh, he's okay.
Because he's been, you know, doing that for the Maple Leafs of the Intercounty League for the last 35 years.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And it's generally people who have a lot of experience in baseball and who've watched a ton of games. The great Neil McCarl of the Toronto Star was an official scorer for a long time.
So are they paid by the league then?
Yes.
Or by the,
they're paid by the league.
Paid by the league.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess that answers the question, but it does. You know, just the fact that they were so surprised and they expected a hometown, sort of a hometown call there, that led me to think, you know, why should that even be a factor? But I guess it's the old, anything that can be judged can be corrupted, I guess, or whatever,
sure.
like boxing. I mean, anything that's subjective rather than objective, you know.
Anything that can be influenced one way or another by the person making that decision being human.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Mike. Appreciate it. We will take more of your calls, but first, let's listen in on what the skipper had to say. John Gibbons, post-game news conference in the wake of the Blue Jays 8-3 win over the Rockies.
Whose idea was it to make Esmil a starter? Was it kind of out of desperation, or was it well thought through?
Well, I mean, it was thought through, but we were at that point where, you know, we needed a starter, you know, and he had back-to-back outings where he threw three innings apiece, and we thought, you know what? I mean, there was a lot of thought that went into it, but in a lot of ways, too, it was some desperation, no question. And he'd done it before. He was all for it. He said, you know, he'd love to do it. You know, I think he thrives on that. That's what he really, actually probably wants to do. So we just kind of built him up, let him run with it, and I tell you what, he's been tremendous. He really has.
How have you seen him evolve over the starts? I mean, obviously, beyond the fact that early on he wasn't able to go all that deep, his progression with his using pitches and so forth.
Yeah, well, yeah, early on, yeah, he was limited what he can do. You know, we're trying to build him up, but I mean, he's a four pitch guy now. You know, we're early on coming out of the bullpen. He's basically a two pitch guy, but he's added that two seam fastball. You know, he throws a little curveball now and then to go along with the slider, and he actually throws some changeups. So he's you know what he gives him, it allows him to gives him a little breathing room. But you know, I see much better command than, you know, coming out of the bullpen. Where, you know, the mentality sometimes there is you go in one, two innings, just air it out, you know, let it fly. Now he's pitching more. But, you know, I tell you what, he's got a dynamite arm. And, you know, that ball, he's got the – I mean, he's really tough on those right-hand hitters. I mean, he can let it fly inside. So it can't be a comfortable at bat. But, you know, he shut down a good hitting team. He really did, as did, you know, Josh last night. So great outing.
Gibby, just talking about that addition of the two-seamer, how important is that for his repertoire now, and what does that kind of do in terms of making him a different pitcher than he was before?
Well, you know, all pitchers have late life in the zone. I mean, it makes all the difference in the world. You know, if you're basically you have a straight fastball, it really doesn't matter how hard you throw. You know, sometimes you make mistakes, and they hit it. You know, where that two-seamer, you know, you get that running into the righties and away from lefties, and, you know, a lot of times it takes it off the barrel of the bat, you know. To those righties, it jams them up. And when you're throwing as hard as he does, you know, that makes a big, big difference. And, you know, now you get a ball going that way, your fastball, and then, you know, your breaking ball is going that way. It makes it that much tougher.
John, anytime you'd have this stretch of pitching for someone, it's important. But given the need and the timeliness of it, how important from a team perspective is what he's given you over this stretch of four starts?
Oh, yeah. I mean that's, you know, we had two guys out, and we're kind of scrambling, looking for guys that could do it. You know, we gave some other guys some shots, and then, you know, he just stepped up. And, you know, I mean, he's got a nice loose arm, so he's very durable. I mean, how many guys got better arms than he's got? I mean, you watch him going out there, and it's, I mean, it makes it look pretty easy. But, you know, the big thing for him, though, too, is keeping in the strike zone. When he does that, I mean, he can overmatch you. I mean, he can still scatter a little bit, and that's when he gets in a little bit of trouble. But when he's on, when he's, you know, putting in the strike zone, you know, he's pretty darn good and tough, you know.
Gibby, the performance of Aaron Sibbia during this win streak, both offensively and defensively, can you comment on that? He seems to have emerged on both sides.
Yeah, no question, Richard. He was cold there with the bat there for a while, but you know, down in Texas, and then the first couple games here, I mean, you can tell he's heating up, you know, and he's hitting some home runs, some doubles driving, and some runs, and then you know, I mean, he takes a lot of heat for his catching. Let's face it, but you know what, he deserves as much credit as those guys out there. He's the guy working them back there, and we've been on a nice little roll, so you know, I hope he's not forgotten along the way too.
There he is, manager John Gibbons. The Blue Jays take down the Colorado Rockies 8-3. Seven straight wins for the Blue Jays, and they are now just two games under 500. And right now, five games out of a playoff spot. And Oakland is leading Texas 5-2 in the top of the seventh. If the A's continue and go on to win that game, the Blue Jays will be 4.5 games out of a playoff spot. Season's not over. They still have to get back to 500 and go from there. But with 92 games left, this season is a long way from over. And I hope that you stick around and enjoy it, because it seems as though it's going to be a fun ride. Peter in St. Catharines, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Thank you, Mike. This is a great win again tonight. This is a great roll that this club is on right now, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. And with that, on that roll with the guys like they're getting great contribution from Esmil Rogers and better than they thought from Chin Ming Wong. I'm just beginning to think now with each day that goes by that I'm really having my thoughts that Ricky Romero's days as a Blue Jay may be done. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
I don't. So much can change so quickly. Yes. If we've learned anything from the first 70 games of this season,
right,
that should be a major lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I really don't think that Ricky Romero's. It's safe to say Romero's days are done as a Blue Jay by any means. Mm-hmm. There will be a point in time in which they're going to need him. Hopefully, at that point in time, he's still pitching well.
Yes, because I know it's hurting him inside, and to be down there in Buffalo. I mean, that's just got to be. I mean, he was an all-star, but was he not?
He was.
Yes, and I just hope for his sake that his career is going to turn around.
Well, that would be nice. I'm sure he does too, and it's
turn around as a Blue Jay.
Yeah, that would be nice too. It's unusual to see a guy fall from grace, from the heights from which he fell to the depths to which he fell, mm-hmm. as quickly. And as hard as Ricky Romero did, so we certainly hope. Hopefully, everyone hopes that he's
one more thing,
back.
Mike.
Yeah,
yeah. I just want to know, even though we are getting closer to the end of July and the big day comes in at Cooperstown for Tom Cheek, I think we have to also maybe later in the year start banging the drum now for Jerry Howarth for the Ford C. Frick Award.
Well, the. The voting, I don't know if it's going to be in September this year or in December this year, but certainly once that voting starts up, I expect people to go to their computers and, there are a lot of deserving candidates. Jerry's still going right now.
Yep.
Jerry's actually asked me specifically not to campaign for him to win the Frick Award, so I won't be doing that. But yeah, how about we enjoy the first one, huh?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Let's do that. I'm going to do an underground. So.
All right, Peter.
Thanks, Mike. We'll see you.
Appreciate the call. Yeah, you know, everyone wants the next thing before they actually have the thing. Let's enjoy this season. Let's enjoy Tom Cheek's induction into the Broadcaster Swing of the Hall of Fame before we start to worry about the next thing that we have to do. I wonder if that's a 21st century thing. Anyway, we are going to step away. We'll let you be updated by Andrew Nye. He'll fill you in on everything, and then we'll come back and we'll do more Blue Jays talk. Phone lines are open. When they win, people don't call. 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell. Long distance. 1-888-666-0590. We haven't heard from Thomas Neal in a long time. Give us a call. 8-3 Blue Jays over the Rockies. It is the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Here's the 1-0 pitch. Swung on and belted. Left field. Forget it. Two-run homer for Edwin. Number 19 on the season. Give him three ribbies tonight. And he chicken wings it around the bases. It is 6-0 Blue Jays. It would be 8-0 Blue Jays after 6 on the way to an 8-3 win over the Colorado Rockies. 7 straight wins for the Blue Jays, and all the haters, all the people who said, who wanted me to admit that the season was over in early May, they've all crawled up into their holes. We're not hearing from them anymore on the Blue Jays talk. So that means lines are open for more rational, right-thinking people. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. As you can hear, I still need your help a little bit. So give us a call. And we'll talk Blue Jays. Tom is in Oshawa. Welcome to the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hi, Mike. A couple of things. I wouldn't be too hard on the haters. That was a pretty bad April. It really turned a lot of people off. I mean, I'm a Blue Jay fan.
Look at what they've missed, though.
No. Well, I think the haters just, I'm sure they're still watching. They're just not calling anymore. but that was a tough April to swallow.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I don't think that's a reason not to be too rough on those people. I mean, if you only want to get passionate about something, I mean, and that's, I think when people called with such unbridled negativity, most of it was put off to, oh, I'm passionate. I'm a passionate fan. So, you know, I'm passionate. When they lose, I get upset. Well, why doesn't that turn around to getting excited when they win?
Well, I think a lot of them are getting excited, to be honest. You're just not hearing from them. Because I know
which kind of stinks. I don't want to only hear from people when they're upset.
Well, I know that, but I know lots of Blue Jay fans that became real haters in April, but have turned around quite a bit, and they're quite excited with what they're seeing. So. But, I mean, let's be honest. Everybody had the high expectations, and, I mean, it couldn't have been any more brutal than it was. I mean,
no, it was awful.
Yeah, I mean, here we are on a 7-game winning streak, and we're still 2 games under 500. Yep. It seems like we've been winning every game for the last 2 weeks, and we're still 2 under 500. So, it's great to see, but as I say, that April was really, really tough to swallow. So I give the haters a bit of a break, because that was really a brutal April. So. Anyway, just a couple of questions. Reyes, do you think he'll be up for the Baltimore series? Are you hearing anything there, or do we know? Or?
I doubt it very much. I think that they're going to be careful with him. I mean, he's DHing tonight, so that's an indication, obviously, that he's not ready to play shortstop every day. He's
right.
Still in the game, though. They're in the 10th inning in a 3-3 tie.
Right.
So he's 1-for-5 after going 2-for-3 last night. So,
right.
I think Friday is a little soon.
A couple other things. I think a guy who I thought has been quite consistent this year is Cabrera. He's just done his job every day, even on the bad legs. He's, you know, you never see him get too emotional. Hits the ball pretty solid. Do you see, would the Jays have, a 2-year contract with him this year
yep.
and next year?
That's
or is
right.
it an option next year?
No, 2-year deal.
A 2-year deal?
Yeah.
I'm just curious. Do you see them, like, trying to extend them at all, or is this not something they would do right now with them?
No, I don't, I don't see why they would do it right now.
Right, okay.
I don't see why he would do it right now. You know, he's got a lot to prove still coming off of last year where he hit 346, but he got dinged for the testosterone. So people want to know what the real Melky is.
Right.
And if he can be a good, productive player, then he could really cash in after these 2 years. So I don't know that it's necessarily in his best interests to want to sign up either.
Have you been satisfied with him? I mean, just from what I've watched, he's been pretty solid at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, he's done fine. I mean, May, he was terrific, and there was that run there where he was hitting 400 for almost 3 weeks.
Right.
But he hasn't been that great in June. He was 2-for-4 tonight, and now he's hitting, about 265 with an on base around 300 for the month of June, which is not good at all. Mm-hmm. And he's been drastically one-sided. He's been a much, much better right-handed hitter than he's been a left-handed hitter, which is good because you're going to have more of your at-bats. Or pardon me, he's been a much better left-handed hitter, which is good because you're going to have more of your at-bats batting left. But, yeah, I mean, aside from that one incredible hot streak, he's just been okay.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I think a key to, just a comment, I mean, the way Josh Johnson looked last night, I just think a key to the Jays' sort of second half of the year will be if he's able to stay consistent. I mean, he's kind of a stopper type.
Well, consistently good, you mean?
What's that, sorry?
Consistently really good.
Exactly, yeah. He's pitched, against San Fran, he was good. But
fantastic.
He appears to be that kind of a type of a stopper-type pitcher, if you know what I mean, if he's on.
He's one of the best in the game if he's on.
Yeah.
And, yeah, if he can be on more often than not, then absolutely.
He stays healthy.
A huge, huge key for them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, Tom. Bye-bye. Appreciate it. Thank you for the call. Phone lines remain open. Remember, when we're done here at 11 o'clock Eastern Time, Jeff Sammet takes over with Sportsnet tonight. And tonight, among his guests, be it some Blue Jays. Former Blue Jays, Joe Carter, is going to be on with Jeff Sammet. Dave Stewart will be on as well. So keep it right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan all night long for wonderful Blue Jay discussion. Mike is in Caledon East. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Thank you, Mike. Just first off, it's my first time calling this season, so I just want to say congratulations on everything. It's good to hear your voice on the radio during
Thank
the game.
You. Thanks very much.
Not a problem. I know the trade deadline's only like a month and a half away, and I'd like to assume that the Jays are going to be somewhat in contention, well above 500 by then. But I'm looking at this team, and there's no glaring hole in anything. I mean, I'm not too happy with the second base situation or up the middle, but I mean, well, I guess Reyes is coming back, but I don't see anything where the Jays really need to improve. I mean, I don't see a big bat necessarily or, what do you think on that?
Well, he can always be better, right? And
absolutely.
We were just discussing Melky Cabrera, and Melky's been okay,
right,
except for that hot streak. You could be better there. You could be better at third base. I don't think you could be better defensively.
Right.
But you could be better offensively than what Brett Laurie has provided.
Absolutely.
You could be better behind the plate as far as getting on. I don't, again, and hitting for average. And I don't know that you could be better power bat-wise. With JP's got, 14 home runs, 15 mm-hmm. home runs now, and we're not even halfway through the season.
Nope.
So there's room to improve there. There's always room to improve in the rotation. You're counting on Esmail Rogers and Chen Ming Wong right now, which is a stretch. There and second base, for sure. There are definitely places for the Blue Jays to improve at the deadline.
Do you think if they got a third baseman or someone who can improve the team offensively, do you think that would do anything to the psyche of Brett Laurie, or do we even want to wade into that water?
I don't know. I mean, I'm reticent to try to get into other people's heads.
Right.
Brett Laurie seems to me to be supremely confident, supremely competitive. And those are things that generally, when you're talking about professional athletes, wind up serving them quite well.
Mm-hmm.
He is off to a poor start offensively this season, but he's still been providing otherworldly defense at third base. I still have a lot of faith in him. He's very young and extraordinarily talented. So I'm not really all that worried about Brett Laurie.
Okay. Well, that's all I wanted to ask, Mike. Thank you. Congrats. Right. Congrats again.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. That opens up a phone line. 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance 1-888-666-0590. We'll get to more of your calls shortly. But first, let's listen to tonight's winning pitcher. Esmail Rogers took a no-hitter into the sixth, the one-hit shutout into the seventh. Got a big win against the team that brought him to the big leagues. Here's what Esmail had to say after the game.
John and Pete have talked about how much they want you to be a starting pitcher. Why has this worked out the way it has?
I don't know. Maybe the confidence they give it to me, I give it back to this guy too. So I think that's the reason they wanted me to be the starting pitcher. So I just try doing my job.
Is your mindset at all different as a starter compared to coming out of the pen?
You know what? I try to be the same if I'm at the bullpen. I just, the day one coming to pitch, I just come in to throw early and get ready for the game. So I try to be the same rhythm I got it when I be at the bullpen.
As Gibby says that he sees you as more of a pitcher in the starting role than rather just airing it out with your fastball coming out of the bullpen. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, he got the opportunity to give me everything where he can, so I just try to follow any opportunity he give it to me.
Are all four pitches working for you right now?
Yeah. You know, tonight I just throw one changer. I just use him a little bit more, my slider, and, you know, work on my sinker. That's my key right now. That's like my goal.
Yeah, that two-seamer, how important has that been as kind of your addition to kind of making this next transition for you?
You know, I got a better confidence in the sinker. And, you know, I can throw a ball for the strike, too. I think that's the reason it's been sensitive like that. So I just try to keep throwing. That's what they told me right now.
How's your body holding up to shocking the system, you know, be a 1-2 inning guy and all of a sudden now you're logging all these pitches? How's your body holding up?
You know, I've been in this moment before, and I'll be in Colorado. I just try to get the same rhythm. I got all the starting pitchers, you know, coming to ruin him and get ready, least weighing everything. So I just try to get that.
Did you take any extra satisfaction in beating that team?
Oh, no. I don't, you know, I just excited to pitch this guy and get an opportunity tonight to face this guy. I know this guy, this team too. So I just, well, who see who's going to be better, and you see tonight.
I notice that you seem a little more easygoing than other starting pitchers on the day of your start. You know, when you're in the dugout, you're still talking with guys. You don't have the same kind of singular focus. I mean,
you know, I'm not that kind of pitcher, like coming to the stadium and the day before I pitch and try to looking for the scouting report or something like that. I just, you know, I know I got an ability, and I just go in there to, if they're going to hit, they're going to hit my pitches. So I'm not going there like thinking about it, like, oh, I had to push inside or something like that. I just doing my job and try to throw it in pitches where I have.
What makes you a better pitcher as a starter now than when you were with Colorado?
My confidence. I think that's the key, and the confidence Gibby and Pip give it to me right now is unbelievable. They told me right away, you know, and the confidence I want to be at the mounds. I know got it in Colorado. I don't want to lie to you. And I got a real unbelievable confidence right now. I can throw any pitch in any count what I want, and any sinker everywhere what I want.
Esmail Rogers, and I'm talking about how confident he is, and boy, he should be, because he has just been phenomenal since being moved into the Blue Jays rotation. Four starts, 20 and two-thirds innings pitched, and I believe four runs. He's been sensational. Should let you know that Johnny Gomes just hit a two-run walk-off home run, and the Boston Red Sox beat the Tampa Bay Rays 3-1, which means if you're counting at home, the Blue Jays are only a game and a half behind the Tampa Bay Rays right now for fourth place in the American League East. It is pretty amazing how much this streak has helped them. And again, they're about to be just 4.5 games back of the second wildcard spot. They're still under 500, so looking at that stuff is premature, but just shows that still a lot of season left, and there is not much distance between the Blue Jays and a postseason spot. They've won 7 in a row. They beat the Colorado Rockies 8-3 today. We'll take more of your phone calls in our final segment of the Blue Jays Talk. Lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Meister Asturias hits one deep to left field, and that's gone. Little Meister getting in on the action as the Blue Jays go back-to-back. His fourth homer makes it 8-0. 8-3 would be your final score. The back-to-back home runs by J.P. Arencibia and Meister Sturz, by the way, the first time this season that the Blue Jays have hit back-to-back home runs. Also the first time in almost 5 years that the Blue Jays have won seven straight. They had a 10-game win streak August 30th to September 9th back in 2008. Right now, they are making a mockery of the long, slow climb back to 500, having won seven in a row to move to within 2 games of the break-even mark and to within 1.5 of the Tampa Bay Rays. For fourth place in the AL East, the Blue Jays will visit the Rays for 3 next week, Monday to Wednesday. They finish it off with the Rockies tomorrow and then an off day Thursday before the Baltimore Orioles come to town for 3. And it would be great to go into that on an 8-game win streak, but they're going to have to pick up their game. 11-4 in the month of June so far, but after tomorrow, 10 straight against the American League East. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Let's go to Jake in Milton. Jake, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
How are you, Mike?
I'm doing all right. Plugging along. What can I tell you? Trying.
Hey, can you believe that the Rays are 0-2 in the Will Myers era?
I know. It's amazing. They're averaging only one run a game. Crazy.
I can't believe it. Huh. Listen, I am thrilled with the last month and a half, especially for watching guys like Brett Cecil, Adam Lind, Casey Jansen. You know, Cecil and Lind have dealt with so much crap from everybody.
Yep.
And Jansen's had the injuries. And, you know, real Jays fans have been following these guys for 4, 5, 6 years, and it's absolutely great to sit back and watch what they're doing. Even seeing McGowan come back for the second time is nice. But my question tonight deals with some upcoming roster moves, and you know, over 70 games, we've seen that everyone is sort of doing what we thought. You know, Cabrera's Cabrera, Batista, Edwin, Lynn's maybe doing a little better, Laurie maybe a little worse, Dickey a little worse, but there's a guy out there, Emilio Bonifacio, that absolutely adds no value to this team. He's proven it over 70 games. The only thing that you can tell me is speed, and he hasn't been able to get on base or be in position to use that. And then you'll come back to me and say he's out of options, he doesn't have options. Like,
I'll come back to you and say that, you know, you with your thesis statement, you're telling me he's proven it over 70 games, right? You said that.
And in his career.
He's proven it. What?
What's his OPS in his career? Under 700.
660. Yeah, but he's not a power hitter. And when you're not a power hitter, you're not going to have a high OPS.
Okay, he's a below average defender, correct?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Okay, so he's got no power. he's not a defender. So, I'm sorry, what's left? Speed?
Speed and the ability to get on base, which is something that he's shown over the course of his career. I mean, you're willing to write him off over 70 games, and I would ask you to look at the 470 that he played before these 70 games. You know, if we've learned nothing over this season, it's that rushing to judgment is not a good idea, right? The door was not closed on this season 2 weeks into April. Adam Lind isn't terrible.
I agree with you.
But in April, when he was hitting 180 with no home runs, you would have said to me, what does he lend to this team? He doesn't hit for average. He doesn't hit for power. He's not an above-average defender. All those things were true of Adam Lind at the end of April.
Bonifacio off the bench can offer speed, which is what Rajay Davis can do.
You're looking at a guy who, in his last full season in the major leagues, hit 296 with a 360 on base.
Yeah, 300 and what? I'm in my car. What does he have, 300 at-bats, though?
641 plate appearances.
Okay. And 30 steals? What was it?
40. Last year he had 30 steals, and he was only caught three times.
Yeah, I don't see that this year, Mike.
Right, you haven't seen it yet this year, but that doesn't mean it's not there.
Okay, good point. I would just say that, you know, we are lacking a bat off the bench. That whole Henry Blanco thing was a silly way to go. I understood in training camp with the whole experience and mentoring crap and whatever. Toley's up, that's okay. Drozic and, you know, we don't have a bat off the bench.
Who does?
Oh, the Cardinals.
The Cardinals? Who do the Cardinals have as a bat off the bench?
They have a lot of bats. look in the American League.
Yeah. Who has a bat off the bench?
Even look at the Yankees. They're
the Yankees do not have a bat off the bench.
I'd take Nick's or you know, over...
Nick's starts for them.
Yeah.
And anyway, he's not that good a hitter. He's certainly no better than, say, Mark DeRosa.
He started at third base for us.
Yeah, and he was terrible.
Okay, so comparing against other teams
is not a wise move. Teams no longer have, in the American League anyway, these great bats sitting on the bench waiting for the opportunity to pinch hit. Those guys just don't exist anymore. I'm not sure. I'm sure they did once upon a time. But there's, you know, if you've got a guy who's that good, he's in the starting lineup.
Yeah, do you not want a guy that can maybe take it out of the yard, though?
Sure, but why would I have him on the bench?
Right? I just don't. Honestly, you got me there. What value does Bonifacio have to this team?
He is a switch hitter with a track record of being able to get on base and being able to run. He can play multiple positions, though he doesn't play any of them especially well. But he is, I think, if he's playing the way he can, and he's not done that but for about a three-week stretch this year, he can be a very valuable piece as a 25th guy. I'm sorry, again, that you've rushed to judgment too quickly on him, but just take a look at what he's done in his career and how old he is, and hopefully that'll make you give him a little more slack. Let's go up to Fenelon Falls. Norm, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Thank you. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Earlier on, you were talking to a caller that you were talking about Esmel Rogers, and you made some statements about his effectiveness out of the bullpen earlier on.
Yeah,
and
lack thereof.
I just want to challenge you on that.
Sure.
Because if you look at his game log,
the
first 11 games, the first 11 appearances that he had, he went 12 and a third innings to an ERA of 2.92. Then he was tonged twice in a row. He pitched two-thirds of an inning against the Yankees and gave up two earned runs, and then he pitched a third of an inning against Boston and gave up three earned runs.
Right, then he had very good outings, and then he had two very poor outings.
And that, just a minute, he ran his average up to 6.08, his ERA up to 6.08, and then from then on, the next...
Three outings were lovely.
The next 10 outings, or 9, I guess it is, up until the time that they started him the first time.
Yeah.
He pitched another 12.1 innings and to an ERA again of 2.92. So if you take out if you take out those two bad outings, he was pitching to an ERA of 2.92 on 24 and two-thirds innings of relief appearances.
Yeah.
That is not bad.
That is not bad. You're right. And two of them were those three-inning shutout stints, which is what helped a lot. But if you go another way, and instead of just taking out those two outings, if you begin at the outing against the Yankees where he got tonged, and you keep it going through seven straight outings, you'll see that over seven relief appearances in a row, he pitched to an ERA of 13.50. So, you know, it depends on what your arbitrary endpoints are.
Well,
can't look at his overall body of work in the bullpen.
No, I
and
agree.
Say that he pitched well.
The overall body of work in the bullpen up until the first start, he was at 4.56.
Yes,
and that's mediocre. I agreed.
Right,
but the primary reason for that
the
is
four
those two,
poor outings. Four.
Those two outings.
Well, four.
Well. I don't see four. I see a couple where he gave up 200 runs, but in a total of two innings. So,
four earned runs in a total of two innings.
Yeah,
that's poor.
Yeah.
So, okay, fine. If you want to debate semantics, Esmail Rogers had four bad outings out of the bullpen that messed with his overall numbers. But when you look at the overall, the numbers weren't very good. But he showed enough glimpses that they wanted to give him, to make him be the one that they gave the try. As a starter, and it's been fantastic.
And that was based on the as you said, the two
three inning shutouts.
Back to back, and
yep.
and that gave them the indication. Well, I just wanted to point out to the fans that were listening that he wasn't all that bad. There's a couple or maybe four bad outings in the group of 22, but still in all, he had a pretty decent stretch out of the bullpen.
Yeah, but you look at the population he's in too, right? In that bullpen that's been so good, where everyone's been pitching so well, even if it's only because of four or five bad outings, an ERA over six. Does tend to stand out in this group. Thank you, Norm. Appreciate it. I want to get to a couple more before we go. Chris is in Toronto. Chris, you're up on the Blue Jays talk.
Good evening, Mike. How you doing?
All right. Go ahead.
Good. Thanks. Good. Good to hear you feeling better, because God, it sounded like a wicked cold last week. And love your show. Never called in. Two quick questions for you. One, there's been all sorts of talk over the last couple of months of maybe another bat coming, you know, a Chase Headley or a Justin Morneau. I don't know if there's really a need for it, but I wanted to get your opinion now that the bats here seem to be picking up. And two, I'm really curious to know where do you think the batting order is going to go, simply because we got Reyes coming back. And other than that, I'll leave it to you. Love your show, and look forward to calling in again soon.
All right. Thank you very much. Justin Morneau was suggested earlier in the season when Adam Lind was struggling. Adam Lind seems to have come out of it, and if Adam can keep this going, and that's been the issue for him, to put a full season together as opposed to half seasons. He's had very good half seasons each of the last 2 years, but not a good full season. So if he can keep this going, then you don't need Justin Morneau, because you have Lind and you have Edwin Encarnacion, and you're covered. Chase Headley is a very interesting dude. Chase Headley is a guy who everybody thinks the San Diego Padres are going to trade. He's a very good defensive third baseman. He's a switch hitter and has become a very good hitter. He may be available, though the Padres have won seven in a row right now, so they're kind of climbing back, and Headley's not having a particularly good year. So you have to ask, what are you willing to give up, and what are they willing to take? Because you have to imagine that the asking price will be high for Chase Headley. Now, if you get him, you can put Brett Laurie at second, and you've bettered your defense, you've bettered your offense, but he's going to come at quite a cost. It's possible, but I think what we need to do is wait and see how this next little while plays out. Do they get back to 500? How far above 500 do they get? How deep into a race do they get? They're going to be 4.5 games out of a playoff spot after tonight. Blue Jays will go for their eighth straight win tomorrow. We're on at 7 o'clock. Make sure you tune in then. We'll see you later.